Blog Talk Radio.
One, everything is going to be all right. You're listening to Tippy Talk. Time now to sit back, relax, listen, and enjoy the moment. Newborn is the official band that provides all the music for Tippy Talk. To hear more of the music, you can go to newbornband.com and enjoy their wonderful sound. And now it is time to step into the Tippy Zone, where we explore the other side of reality, the side that allows you to reshape your life, step into your power, and connect to the fact that we are all one. Welcome to Tippy Talk, where we go from where you are to where you want to be. I'm your host, Tippy Feldstein. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Tippy Talk. We have been focusing and talking about dementia and Alzheimer's, and it has been quite an experience. I did not realize that many people were suffering from it, either directly or indirectly, with either loved ones or actually going through it themselves. I believe that dementia and Alzheimer's has reached almost an epidemic proportion. And so first, I'd like to explain what dementia and Alzheimer's means and why it's so confusing to people who don't know if it's dementia or Alzheimer's or what it is. So basically, dementia is the umbrella disorder of what happens when people start forgetting things and getting confused. Basically, one of the main reasons they have said that happens is because of some kind of mineral deposits in the brain. Well, at least that's one of the things. And then Alzheimer's is more specific symptoms that of dementia that are displayed. And that's called Alzheimer's. There's a different kinds of dementia, like Lewy body dementia and other kind of dementia. But it seems to be that Alzheimer's is one of the most popular ones. And today we are very fortunate to have a great guest, Christina Turner, who has had a lot of experience with this problem. She's had experience as a professional and also experience is personal with family members who also suffer from the same thing. So I'd like to welcome Christina. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really happy that you were able to do that.
Thank you for having me, Tippy.
So Christina, you have personally been affected by this. How did that all start for you? You were walking along one fine day, and then what happened?
My mom had been sick, and I couldn't reach her by phone, and I stopped work. It was unusual. I stopped work, and I drove to her house, and I found her actually in a state of kind of an emergency. She had an unusual onset because she had shingles, and it caused an encephalitis, an inflammation in the lining of the brain. But she actually never recovered. It also did some vascular damage. And so I was 50 years old, and within 2 weeks, it was evident that she was not going to make enough of a recovery to go home. It would either be going to a nursing facility or my house, and I chose to bring her to my home. I thought at the time that she might make more recovery However, she did not. She lived for almost another full 5 years, and the decline continued throughout that 5 years. So that was my initial. I worked as a home care nurse prior for many, many years, and I'd had lots of experience with patients in their homes, but I had never had hands-on with a family member until my mom.
Mm-hmm. So you said that you were at work one day when you rushed over to your mom. What kind of work were you doing at that time?
I was a home care nurse.
So you were a home care nurse for a long time, not necessarily because of this dementia.
Right. No, no, not at all because of the dementia. I'd started many years before that and had lots of different kinds of experience with home care, you know. But the real onset of my caregiving occurred at age 50. And within a year, my brother-in-law, my husband's brother, also, it became evident that he was not going to be able to live alone. He had lived in a city away from us. So he was a phone call check. And I guess it became evident through the phone calls that he would give me the same responses no matter what I asked. Have you been out fishing lately? Yeah, a couple weeks ago. Have you seen your doctor lately? Oh, yeah, I was there a couple weeks ago. Everything was a couple of weeks ago. And we made arrangements. One of my children came in and stayed with my mom. We drove over to where he lives. And I found out that he hadn't been eating, caring for himself. He'd been walking to the post office 3 to 5 times a day to pick up his mail that he may have picked up the first walk. And it was just evident he couldn't stay alone. So I brought him home that same day.
And I want to go back for a second for your mom, because you said that as she had the onset of dementia, she also had shingles. And
yes.
I don't know much about shingles, thank God, but from what I understand, it is excruciatingly painful. Is that what she had?
It was. She had a severe amount of pain. She also had a fever with it. And like I said, it caused an encephalitis and an inflammation in the lining of the brain, and she just literally never recovered. That inflammation also caused some vascular damage. But no matter what the dementia is from, whether it's through drug-induced, alcohol-induced, or disease, or vascular, or stroke-induced, dementia is just that. It's dementia. You end up with a lot of the same typical problems, no matter, some things vary, but you end up with the same kind of problems across the board, no matter how that person got dementia.
Are you saying she had shingles in her brain?
The shingles weren't in her brain, but she got this infection, shingles, and it caused an inflammation in the lining of her brain, which is what encephalitis is. And she also had it on her, you know, like it was on her face. So it's always a concern there for people that you could become blind if it gets in your eye, and that has happened. It's not a very common occurrence, but it does happen. And I suspect that probably a lot of people, it doesn't happen very often that people get an encephalitis from it, but it does happen. So...
Okay, so I'm not very educated about the name of diseases and symptoms, so I don't think I ever heard of encephalitis. Can you tell me what that is?
And actually, it's an inflammation of the lining of the brain.
Inflammation
so it can
of
cause
the lining.
Swelling.
Oh, you did say that. So basically, encephalitis means an inflammation specifically in the lining of the brain. It's not just an inflammation
Correct.
Anywhere.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Correct.
That's what
it's in the brain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that probably is what caused your mom to have the onset of dementia.
Yes. Yes.
So.
Well, at least that's what the doctors felt. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's a good guess, but you never really know for sure. I mean, they do have to come up with a theory. So that's what they came up with. But really, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter so much what caused it. It matters what it is and what you have to deal with, and is there a cure for it, and all those other things that really do matter.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It makes no difference.
Exactly. So the thing that I'm kind of curious about, you've been a caretaker, which is a very specific training, very specific kind of work. And then you went from being a caretaker professionally with a bunch of cases into being a caretaker for your own family, your mother, your brother-in-law. What's the difference?
I think the difference is the personal relationship. I know that myself, I probably was not as I tried to be less rigid with structure with my mom because it was my mom. And I don't know if that necessarily turned out to be a good thing, but with my brother-in-law. Well, my brother-in-law, in his case, because he took advantage of it. He was a sundowner, and he would try to get out and get away. Actually got into a van one time at 2:00 in the morning and got loose. Normally, that one of the very first things I would have told people if I were working was to put a latch on the top of their door, because a lot of times in the evenings or night times, people that will try to get out won't understand why they can't get the door open, and eventually they'll quit. By that time, maybe you've got a bed alarm or a door alarm that can go off and alert you. But I was a little bit lax in some of those things early on. I think I wasn't necessarily in denial, but maybe you could say I was. But I think that you tend to be a little bit more so when it's your own family member. It's kind of a shock. I didn't really have anything to lead up to my mother's illness. It was sudden, and I was sort of in disbelief that she could be having shingles and an infection, and now she isn't thinking clearly and can't remember things. So
Was it difficult to accept it?
It was real difficult. It was difficult because within the first, I guess, maybe 6 weeks, I came to understand that my mother did not know that I was her daughter. And that explained some of her behavior for the first few weeks in my home. She thought that her daughter had abandoned her. And she felt as though she had become such a chore, so much work, that her daughter had just decided she couldn't do it and that she had left. And I was just some nice woman that happened to have the same name that came in and covered for her. Strange way to live, we did.
Yeah, so that's, I think, the first step when somebody you love is diagnosed with dementia or is obviously displaying some symptoms of dementia, is the personal acceptance of this is how it is. They're not going to recognize you, and they're going to live within their own story, which could be like your mother, that her daughter left her and some nice woman who looks just like her daughter and has her daughter's name is taking care of her. That's one story, but each one of them, and that's what I found with everybody that I talked to in New York and that I've interviewed, is that they create their story wherever they get that from. And it doesn't matter how much you try to explain to them what the reality is, it's their story. So when we try to, I'm sure at first you try to tell her, no, mom, I'm your daughter, I'm here. Did you try to do that?
No, not really, but I was quite surprised to find out that she had thought that I wasn't her daughter. It was just really a big surprise to me. But I think I'd worked enough by then with other patients that I knew this was probably real. I didn't like it much, though.
Well, of course not. But, okay, so because nobody would like it. So because you've had that experience, you knew not to sit around and try to convince her that you are her daughter and not to stress her out even more by saying, no, mom, your daughter's here. No, mom, oh, my God, you're so stupid. You don't understand. I'm here. You didn't do that because you had that experience. So for somebody that's finding out that their all of a sudden their parent or their husband doesn't recognize them, how would you suggest that they treat that person other than try to convince them that their reality is not true?
Let them believe whatever they're telling you. Don't try to discourage them. Don't try to differentiate. Don't try to argue. Don't try to be right, because there is no right. Sometimes they don't even see things that are actually there, or they look at a person and might see someone else, and it may not happen every single time, but it might happen once a week. It might happen more often. It might happen less often, but don't try to make their story be changed. Accept it and maybe comment about it. Oh, that's nice, or oh, okay, I didn't realize that. Oh, okay, that's so-and-so. And move on. Try to distract. Try to get them entertained with something else that might be happening or that you think that they might be and that they might enjoy, whether it's music, which is a really good stimulant and a very good diversion, or whatever else.
And I think, yes, and I think that what you just said is so huge that I really have to repeat it, because a lot of people sit around spending a lot of time trying to convince to make them see the truth. And I think it's such a painful process, and that's why it's so big. It's very painful for the person that doesn't see that reality. I mean, here I am, and in my reality, my daughter left me, and there's this woman here who happens to have my daughter's name and sits here and tells me that she is my daughter, and insists on telling me that, but I know it's not true. Then you keep on doing, if you keep, thank God you didn't, okay? But you have experience and you're a professional, but that's not the majority of people. Do not try to convince them of your reality. Let them be in their reality. Christina, I cannot even emphasize that enough. I think what you just said is one of the key elements to make their life less painful, because I think it's painful enough when you sit in and thinking, oh my God, my daughter abandoned me, in your case, that somebody else sitting there telling them, I'm your daughter, it just makes it worse. It does not make it any better. And it's not going to change.
It makes
so
them more
huge.
Paranoid, which right. Paranoia is a real can be a real problem for a lot of people with dementia. And again, that does not happen every day. It's not always an occurrence, but when it does happen, it can aggravate the situation and then make them fearful in other areas of their care, fearful to go to the bathroom, fearful to eat, fearful to sleep, fearful to take medicine. So what I see with a lot of people is that not just that they want to make sure that their loved one understands, no matter what, that they are that person, but they also don't understand when something is happening. If a person's behavior changes, when your loved one's personality changes, when company comes, it may not be what you think it is. And a lot of people will believe, well, they're jealous. They don't want me spending time with anyone but them. They don't like my other family members. They only want all the attention. That is like completely not true. Completely. They may not understand why there's other people involved, why other people are coming into the house. Sometimes it's the noise level. Sometimes it's just a different face. Sometimes it's just too much activity, and it's a stimulant for them, only in a negative way. And so you have to be cautious when our loved ones are exposed to others or crowds. Sometimes people will say, I wanted to take my mom out to watch this, you know, whatever kind of a show. But in reality, mom may not enjoy that anymore. You know, she may have spent her life loving something like that, but she may no longer be able to tolerate those kind of activities. And people they really do not understand that. So I think I would say to people, get as much education as you can. Please don't expect the doctor's office to give you all of these details. They can't. They don't even know about all of them. But there are lots of places to seek help and advice. And the more education that you have as a caregiver, the better that you can give to your loved one.
Exactly. And there's one other thing that you touched that is huge. It's almost like every word that comes out of your mouth is a pearl in the life of someone that has just found out or is just beginning to deal with a loved one having dementia. And I'm going to bring it out because I have heard people say that before. Oh, my mom is so jealous when I talk to other people. Oh, my mom can't take it. I can't take it anymore. She's choking me. She's so jealous. And it's not jealousy. And nobody's choking you. It's part of the disorder. And I think that if that's what you think and if that's what you believe, until you learn that it's not, you're just putting that person in more pain and yourself in more pain because
yes,
the pain of, oh, my God, my mom is all of a sudden jealous if anybody else talks to me. What does she want me to do? It's not jealousy. It's not mean intended. Nothing they do is intended to be mean or cruel. It's just a different reality. And I think the faster that we get into that reality and understand it and accept it, which is not easy by any means, the better off they are, the more comfortable they will be, and the happier they will be. Because it happened to me and it happened to everybody. When I found out about the fact that my mom was getting confused and she was not remembering things and she went through a strain of things of trying to escape. I think that's a very common thing. Going to the grocery store, not finding her way home. That's a very common onset and very common symptom. But we got to the house every time we would live and eventually it deteriorates, right? It gets worse. So one of the things she did when we would get to her house where she had lived for 30 years, she would refuse to go inside the house and say, this is not my house, please take me home. And me, being totally ignorant, would sit there for hours saying, yes, it is your house, please, let's go inside. And she's like, no, I'm not going inside, please take me home. I want to go home. And she would attempt to run away and say, I'm going to take a bus because I want to go home. And me sitting there for 4 hours trying to convince her that it's her house was the stupidest wrong thing to do that I would probably regret, although, you know, I can't spend my life regretting things. But don't ever try to convince them. Try to find a different way to get them. Let's say if you can't get them into the house, try to find a different way to get them into the house where you acknowledge the fact that this is not a house. So, like, what I could have done instead was say, you know what, this is my house. Would you like to come in for a hot cup of soup? And then she would say, sure, yeah, let me have soup. But then after the soup, please just take me home. And then once she's inside, she kind of forgets. That would have been the smart way to do it. Rather than sit on the stairs and the poor woman was begging me to take her home. And if it wasn't so sad, it would be really funny. And at that point, I couldn't cry all the time. So I had to laugh at the situation. But after 4 hours of sitting on the steps, it was not funny anymore. It was very frustrating.
Sure, but you didn't know. That's the whole point. You didn't know. And that's why I say education is the key. Education is the key to any disease. The more that you know, the better that you can deal with whatever it is we're talking about. And there is a difference between like vascular dementia and Alzheimer's. But there are so many similarities and so many problems that we all face that I just can't stress enough that, you know, look for ways to become educated. Your local hospitals have dementia programs. Your health departments have programs, and they have people that give speaking engagements. Libraries do the same thing. There's, you know, all sorts of Alzheimer and dementia-related sites online. Go talk with the hospital staff and ask, who might in your area be willing to give you more information, area on aging. The list goes on and on, but get the education because it is a very demanding job and it will be much more rewarding for your loved one and for you if you know more. And I don't pretend to know everything, but I know that you have to be educated.
That's great advice. So I would say the first thing to do before you do anything else, get as educated as possible. Also find out any kind of support that you have in your community. Like you said, the hospitals, the doctors, talk to the doctors. You'll be surprised how much support is in every community because this is very widespread. You may not know about it until it hits home, but it's very widespread. And I'm really glad that we're doing this because I think one of the things that is really difficult is when you first find out, what now? What do you do? And I think that's when you laugh the most. Once you get an idea of what it is after a year or two of struggling, then you already kind of can find a way to deal with it and to act. But until you find out what it is, until you find out, oh, my God, what is this? How am I going to deal with it? What's going on? Education is really the key, totally the key.
Yes.
And some of the symptoms exactly is trying to get away from the house, and they go out, they can't come back. Getting away is one of the very common symptoms that most people have. And another thing that you said that is also really like the beginning of everything exploding is when you find out they're not able to live alone anymore. You really realize, no, this person cannot take care of themselves alone anymore. Somebody has to step in, and usually it's going to be you. Usually it's not going to be somebody else. And,
right.
And that's the important thing, is educate yourself as much as possible, get support as much as possible. And also another thing, find out if you have an insurance policy, do they have long-term care, what kind of help are you going to get, how much is this going to cost you, how much is the insurance company going to pay. Financial issues are huge, and that's definitely something you want to find out right away and set that up right away, because people have lost everything financially by not knowing things that they might have available for them. And there is a lot of things.
There are many things available, but everybody doesn't fall into that criteria. And there are many people that are borderline financially that are not able to get help. And those are the people that usually suffer the most. So, you know, check around and see what is available, because it certainly is to everyone's benefit. You will need to have some time off. You need to go get groceries. You still need to have a functioning life of some sort, even if it's just through groceries and doctor appointments. They'll have to get out, and you can't always take your person with you.
Right, exactly. So that's a few things to do when you find out, and I think that's when the door opens up. But another thing to take into consideration that you might have experience with is when you bring someone with this kind of this disease to your house and you live with other people, it's not just going to affect you that you're going to spend a lot of time taking care of them. It's going to affect other people that live in the household. How does it affect them, and what's the best way for you to set it up so that it is the best scenario for everyone?
When I brought my mom in, and shortly thereafter, my brother-in-law, my husband was alive and lived with me, and did not have any dementia at that time. He was helpful to a certain point, but mostly he shied away from it, from all of it, even from his own brother. He didn't know what to say or how to handle this different situations, and so he really wasn't, you know, the kind of support that I needed, and yet I needed to be his wife also. So make sure that you can figure out how you can get time set aside, not only for yourself, which might only end up being a hot bath and, you know, Calgon take me away for half an hour, but you need to find time for your spouse or whoever else it is that you're living with, because they deserve to continue to live. And a dementia person can literally take up all of your time. And I really am concerned when people try to keep a person like that in their home when they have young children. And I personally do not recommend it. My daughter and a grandchild lived with us for a short period of time. Well, actually not really short. It was a little over a year. And it was very detrimental to the well-being of the three-year-old child at the time. I know we don't have enough time to talk about it right now, but it's something that you should really consider before you do. It's hard enough to be a full-time caregiver while you're trying to raise children. They don't mix well.
See, I never considered that. Thing is, what do you do if it's a parent and they have nowhere else to go and you happen to have a child? That would be a very difficult dilemma.
it is a very difficult situation, and you may have to consider placement. And I know that people don't want to, but sometimes people don't always consider placement anyway. They feel that it's their duty, and they might not be cut out to do that job. There's nothing wrong with that. It isn't for everyone, and there should be no shame or guilt in it. And if you aren't going to be able to care for them and give them the best that they can have, then you should consider placement.
Right.
It's a hard, this is a very hard life, no matter what the outcome is. It's, there's nothing easy about any of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. It's nothing easy about it. Especially if you have promised your loved one that you would never put them away anywhere in any homes. That makes it even more difficult because
you bet.
Now what do you do? What do you do? You have a child. You don't want to damage your child, and it could potentially do that. So what do you do? You know, it's not easy. It's not an easy situation all around, no matter how you look at it, but there are some elements that make it even worse and some elements that make it better. There's a lot of different things and different issues that you have to deal with. And that's why I'm really glad, Christina, that you agreed to talk about it and to start opening people's eyes. I would really like for people, if they have any questions or specific things that we did not discuss that they want to ask, would they be able to contact you anywhere and maybe ask you? Would that be okay?
Yes, that would be fine. I would welcome any questions.
So how do they
contact you? They could reach me. I'm on Facebook, Christina Turner. It's C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-A. They can also reach me at my email, which is, I'll spell it, E-S-O-X-P-I-K-E, esoxpike, at live.com. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, so that's ESOX with an S like sugar, not an F like I did. It won't get there. It's
ESOXPike.com,
at live.com. And also, if you go to Facebook, it's a very famous name, Christina Turner. How can you possibly forget that? And you can find it as questions. If you want to reach out to me, right? I mean, how can you go wrong? If you want to reach out to me and any input that you have or any information or any questions, you're welcome to email me at tippytalkshow@gmail.com, or you can go to my website at tippytalkshow.com, and you could always leave a remark and follow me if you want to hear more. We're going to be talking about dementia and Alzheimer's for the next couple of weeks, and we're going to cover a lot of different parts of it and a lot of different elements. I'm personally taking care of my mom right now, who happens to be in a very late stage of it, and I don't even know what to expect, so I still have a lot of learning to do myself. Christina has been through it, obviously, more than once. You had your mother, you had your brother-in-law, and your husband.
And my husband.
Also, you had to take care of. That's huge. I mean, I am having problems just with one, so I have no idea how you handled it. And just how you handled it and stayed healthy and didn't end up in a mental institute, that in itself we can talk about an entire show, for sure.
For sure.
So really,
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much again. And we will probably do some kind of a follow-up later on and tackle some other issues that we have. But for now, I really want to tell you how much we appreciate it. I hope that you guys listening have learned something. I am sure you did, especially if you're starting to deal with it right now. And have a wonderful, magical evening. And I look forward to talking to you soon again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.